Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon Central Time, and there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for tuning in. This is Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem, and Ryan Thomas at the controls, and Grace Rife at the phones, and we're looking forward to a great hour ahead today with someone who is, I was going to say named after my grandson. No, that didn't quite work. So no, No, that's not quite right, but... We're commenting how much we like the name Archibald.
That's cool.
It's a good name. My grandson Ari, my son calls him Archibald because some people shorten up names, but if you want a nickname, why not go longer? So anyway, he's always been kind of a contrarian. Maybe there was a sleep deprivation thing that we can get into. We'll find out about that with our guest in a moment. I should mention too, we are coming up here. In a little over a week away from our Job to Career Symposium, for those in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area or willing to drive a little bit, it's an opportunity. We'll have Dave Stark on tomorrow on the show. Is that right?
Thursday.
We'll have him on Thursday.
It's very close.
That's right. Thursday. But he's a business and career expert, and we're going to talk about those that are maybe unemployed or underemployed. So it's a great opportunity for you to be a part of that, learn some great insight. In fact, I heard Austin Hill this weekend on Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business recommending that those that are gainfully employed to take someone that you know in your church or your community or family that isn't and, just buy them a ticket. It's just $10. And buy them a ticket and get the box lunch and come and enjoy a good evening and then use it as an opportunity to sort of encourage someone else mentoring along the way. So I thought that was a good idea, and I hope that you'll look into it. You can get details about that career symposium online at myfaithradio.com. It's myfaithradio.com. Let's get to today's topic because there is a relationship to work because there's some people that are sleeping instead of working right now, in fact. No. And those that, in fact, it costs us. The lack of sleep costs us significantly in our nation. So it is, in fact, I saw a report not too long ago that suggested that even driving accidents, lack of sleep is one of the big concerns there. So
makes sense.
We're going to find out about it. The book we're going to reference is called Sleep, It Does a Family Good, How Busy Families Can Overcome Sleep Deprivation. And to help us with that, our guest today, Dr. Archibald Hart, former dean of the School of Psychology at Fuller Theological Seminary. He's trained as a clinical psychologist, and he's now retired from full-time teaching, but he continues to teach a couple courses in psychopharmacology. And if you can use that word a couple times today, Ryan, you will have done well. He's written several books, and books like Stress or Depressed, Safe Haven Marriage, Unmasking Depression in Women, Unmasking Male Depression, Unveiling Depression in Women, The Anxiety Cure. His new one is called Digital Invasion, How Technology is Shaping You and Your Relationships. And we always appreciate the opportunity to have Arch Hart with us on Connecting Faith. Welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Neil, thank you very much. Glad to be with you.
We want to talk about sleep. It's, we're still early on in the new year, and people hopefully had some resolutions about they were going to eat better and get fit. And it does seem like sleep is one area that we maybe overlook as a real crucial part to our overall health. How big an issue is sleep deprivation in our country?
It is a major issue. Dan Rather of 60 Minutes stated that we have a sleep crisis because we now live in a 24/7 world. Sleep is no longer a priority for the average American, and the consequences of that are very, very widespread physical health, mental health issues, you name it, difficulty in school. If we are not getting enough sleep, we are not living a full, complete life.
Well, I guess that's the next question then. How much sleep do we really need? And I assume that it varies from infants to adults.
It does vary from infants. So, you know, the children need at least, you know, young children need at least 12 hours a night of sleep. As you get older, in the early teens, you're looking at perhaps 9 or 10 hours. But in my book, I make a case that the minimum sleep need for us as humans is 9 hours a night. But I have to clarify that, Neil, because we have great difficulty defining whether we're sleeping or not. A lot of people say, you know, I lie awake and I'm lying there waiting to go to sleep, and I get anxious and I prolong that lying there. And they don't realize that just lying and resting is part of the sleep cycle. So I encourage people to think in terms of, from the moment you put your head on the pillow to when you lift your head off the pillow, that period of time for a healthy adult should be as close to 9 hours as possible.
That's a significant amount of time more. I would assume that what the average American is probably what more like 6 or 7 hours.
Oh, yes. Less than that, even. It's dropped down to 5 or 6 years. Yes. The statistics are quite frightening. In 2000, 62% of adults were not getting enough sleep, according to the scientists. In 2005, that increased to 75%. And right now, we think that it's probably around 80% of people, and growing, who are not getting enough sleep for the purpose of health and mental functioning. But I should also just hasten to add, Neil, that part of the problem is people don't understand the sleep process. We sleep in 1.5 hour cycles. Then we wake up and almost fall immediately back to sleep again. But we sleep in 90-minute cycles. So that, and if you don't complete the final cycle, this is where the alarm clock is the curse of our modern day. Although new alarm clocks are being developed that can tell whether you're in the dream stage of sleep, usually when the alarm clock wakes you. And there are new alarm clocks being developed that can tell if you're dreaming and not wake you during the dream. Wait until you finish your dream cycle and then wake you up. But the point I'm making is that the amount of sleep we get, including that early stage of just dozing and still aware of what's going on around you, that has to be a multiple of 90 minutes, 1.5 hours, because that is the cycle. And if you don't complete the cycle, you don't get credit for it. If you wake up, check yourself. When you've been woken up by an alarm clock in the middle of a dream, you probably followed it with a very miserable day.
So to get through that, in dreaming, that's the deepest part of the sleep. Is that right? Maybe we need to explain that.
That's the final stage.
Okay.
Yes, it's called REM sleep. Because REM, rapid eye movement, and its function is different from the other the early stages of sleep. The stage 1 through 4, and then going to 5, the REM sleep, 5 stages. And 1 through 4 is a slow process of falling and becoming unconscious, but there are things going on in your brain and body during all of those steps. The immune system comes alive to fight off any infection you have got. There's a process whereby your brain has to sort through its memory and through what it's going to keep. What short-term memory has to be transferred to long-term memory. It's a complex. There's nothing else on earth as complex as the human brain and the sleep process. But as you sleep as you go through the stages of sleep, you start out, you probably only get about 3 or 4 minutes of dream sleep in the first cycle. In the next cycle, it goes longer and longer until your final sleep cycle, you are dreaming for 25, 30 minutes. It's the longest period of dream sleep. And it is the dream sleep that is absolutely essential to mental health, to learning. If you're a student and you deprive yourself of dream sleep, in fact, studies have been done where they have, for 3 or 4 days, deprived humans of dream sleep. And they created a schizophrenic-like mental attitude. I mean, that's how absolutely crucial. And if you don't get enough dream sleep, your body will demand it. And that's when we get these accidents, because people accidentally fall asleep when they're driving or something else like that.
Talking today about sleep, all things sleep-related. That's our topic today. Love to have you join the conversation. We're going to talk more with Dr. Arch Hart. He's a former dean of the School of Psychology at Fuller Seminary, Theological Seminary. He's authored a number of books, the latest called Digital Invasion, How Technology is Shaping You and Your Relationships. And we're going to get into the role that technology has played, and not necessarily in a positive way, in helping us sleep. But the book we're referencing today is called Sleep, It Does a Family Good. How busy families can overcome sleep deprivation. Maybe that you have a question about sleep, like some good advice from Dr. Hart. You're welcome to join us today on the discussion. It's 877-93-FAITH. That's the number, 877-933-2484. Or, of course, you can always go to the website, myfaithradio.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page to connect with us that way. We'll talk about technology, how that's affected us. Is it possible to store up or catch up on sleep, get into sleep aids, medications, all that stuff? So you may have some questions. Love to have you on the broadcast as well. More with Arch Hart in a minute.
Helping you grow deeper in your faith.
Do you go through the motions of going to church and praying without feeling like you really know God? Hey friends, I'm Susie Larson, and on the next Live the Promise, my guest is author and woman of faith speaker, Angie Smith. She shares her own journey of chasing God and what it means to have a real relationship with Him.
Live the Promise with Susie Larson, weekdays from 3 to 4 on Faith Radio.
You can help make people rich, and it has nothing to do with money. Northwestern's Adult Bachelor of Science degree in Health Psychology with a concentration in Applied Behavioral Analysis can get you on your way. You'll learn how to promote health in people of all ages, focusing on behaviors that contribute to wellness and building lives that are truly rich. For more on this brand new online accelerated program, visit unwsp.edu. University of Northwestern, St. Paul. Learn, lead, invest, impact.
Past the hour, I was thinking about, was it Jacob who used the rock as a pillow?
Mm-hmm.
Seemed a little, that's probably a little harder pillow than what I prefer. In fact, I was going to ask Arch Hart about pillows. You're talking about, laying your head in the pillow, that you need 9 hours kind of from the beginning to the end of that process. Arch Hart is a former dean of the School of Psychology at Fuller Seminary. He now, he's retired, but he teaches a couple of courses in psychopharmacology. And he's authored several books, including, I think, several with his daughters, which he has three and four grandsons, three granddaughters, at least last count anyway. We're happy to have him here to talk about sleep. It does a family good. Arch, let's talk about pillows. Are pillows actually an issue? Do they enhance or inhibit sleep?
Pillows can be an issue, yes. It depends on your body's structure. Some people can sleep without a pillow. Some need a large pillow. It has to do with the shape of your spine, your body generally. But not only the pillow, but your mattress. Good sleep requires a good bed and pillow. And there are lots of people who don't get a good night's sleep simply because their sleeping environment isn't conducive to helping them sleep. So, to the best of your ability and economy, make sure that you have comfortable pillow and mattress, and that the temperature in the room is appropriate. Those are little things, but very important in the long term.
So you're talking about sleeping environment. I assume that it needs to be quiet and dark, right?
I mean, yes, that's correct. I had a client, a patient many years ago, who was actually a movie director, and he hardly slept at night. Like so many people, he believed that sleep was unnecessary, that it was just a waste of time. You think how much you can be doing if you're not spending time sleeping. So, but I finally convinced him that his real problem was that I have a number of emotional problems, was that he wasn't getting enough sleep. So he went home one day after his visit with me, bought some 5/8-inch plywood. He was a bachelor, and nailed it over his bedroom window, because I had emphasized with him that it is absolutely essential that both the noise and the light levels be controlled. That you have to have a darkened environment, and he was in Hollywood, so he had a lot of light around. So he put all this plywood on his bedroom window. He didn't show up at the studio the next morning, and finally, 5 o'clock that evening, they went and they found him still asleep in his bed. For the first time for many, many years, he slept right through the night and all through the next day. So darken your environment is very, very important. You should darken your environment about an hour before you go to bed.
Good advice. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that we use these little low-level lights at night in the evening. My wife and I, we turn off our main lights, and interestingly, TV doesn't put out enough light. But darkness is essential for sleep because your brain produces a hormone called melatonin, which is essential for sleep. And if your environment is not dark enough, or early enough, if you don't darken your environment, you should darken it about an hour before you go to bed. You're not going to produce melatonin that your brain needs to help itself go to sleep. It's as simple as that.
Well, we'll come back, talk more about melatonin and medications and things, but let's check in. Julie is listening in, call in from Hinckley with a question about naps. Julie, you're on with Arch Heart. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering if our lifestyle, both my husband and I have to get up about 3 o'clock a.m. to be at work, and then maybe catch a nap early evening, but because we have kids, we don't get to bed till 9 or 10. Well, does a nap supplement?
Yes, it does. Yeah, this is an excellent point that you're raising right now. But let's clarify between two types of naps. There's a nap where you lie down for 15 minutes because you're physically tired and you want to rejuvenate your strength or get your adrenaline down because you're too excited, etc. That's a nap. You understand? And then there is what Winston Churchill used to call a full sleep. His afternoon nap was actually you put on your pajamas and you get into bed. And the Prime Minister of England during the Second World War was renowned for his prolonged nap in the afternoon. And the principle here, Neil, that is so very important is that if you are in your job or if mothers who are feeding babies and so on who have a lot of disruption, you don't have to sleep 9 hours contiguously. You can sleep for 3 hours or 4.5 hours, and if something may interrupt, then you can go back to sleep again. The critical question is how much sleep are you getting in 1 week, because that's the other very, very important bit of information, that the brain does not count its sleep on the basis of a daily dose. You have a sleep cycle of 1 week, and that's why you can make up for sleep loss at a weekend if you can get some extra time to sleep, or if it doesn't matter what time of the day it is. As long as in a one-week cycle that you have fed your brain with enough sleep for it to do its job properly. Naps are an excellent idea. I nap every day. And if you can make that nap a 1.5 hour or multiple of 1.5 hours, all the better.
All right. I'm hoping that you won't doze off here during the rest of this program, Arch. Just saying. that would help us out here probably. So can you in fact, as you see, you can kind of catch up on sleep. So if you don't get enough during the week, but on Saturdays and Sundays, our teenage kids, when they sleep till noon on Saturday, we should just let them do that.
Yes, absolutely true. And that's one of the things that a sleep commission some years ago came up with, was this important principle that the brain does not count it on a daily basis, that it's over a one-week cycle. But if you don't make up within 1 week, there's a penalty. They use the metaphor of the bank account. You've got a bank account, sleep bank. You deposit sleep and you make withdrawals. And if you are overdrawn, put some sleep back in. And in a one-week cycle, you should be able to, preferably be able to cycle through and add the extra sleep that your body needs to make up for the total for a one-week period. That's why my one daughter went, my grandsons were in their teen years, and they would go during the week, and they wanted to sleep in all Saturday morning. And my daughter used to wake them up. No, you have a choice to do. And I had to sit her down and say, honey, you know, the best thing you can give your kids on Saturday morning, let them sleep, because they're making up for the deficiency of sleep during that period. So you can manage that, and that's a very good strategy for folks who, for whatever reason, can't get a full night's sleep in a single day.
Wow, it just sounded like there were some families listening that heard that and go, oh, no, Arch, don't tell me that. that opens up a whole another problem. We maybe get into that later. I did want to ask you, I was interested in looking at the book, Sleep It Does a Family Good, that you talk about when to deal with the jet lag, that you kind of, you maybe cash sleep a little bit. You sleep ahead, if you will.
Yes, you see, you've got the one-week cycle, and if you know that 3 or 4 days from now you're going to be somewhere in New York, and you're not going to, you know, there's a time change, and you're not going to get to bed at the right sort of time, and the one-week principle, you can deposit sleep ahead of time, and therefore, later in the week when you are deprived, you are not your brain has had enough sleep. So, and you can do it, you can do it ahead of time, and you can do it following the time. When you come back from a trip that has disturbed your sleep, you can deposit more sleep. It's that bank account. If you just think of it in terms of I've overdrawn at the bank, I've got to go and put some money back in. And if you're overdrawn at sleep, go put some sleep back in. You can do it ahead of time. You can do it after the period. But you have 1 week. That's the important underlying principle. If you don't make it up in that 1 week, there is an overdraft fee. There's a penalty that you pay in the deprivation of your sleep.
I only have about 60 seconds for this question, but a listener wanted to know, what do you think of these sort of space materials like the Tempur-Pedic mattresses and pillows? Any thoughts on those?
A lot of it I think is hype, but anything that helps you sleep better is worthwhile. But don't take it too far. Some people who blame the mattress and don't want the right sort of mattress, otherwise they can't sleep, when in fact it's the other habits that is preventing them from getting an adequate amount of sleep.
And that's what we're going to talk about next, as we deal with some of those other habits, because one of Arch's latest books is called Digital Invasion, How Technology is Shaping You and Your Relationships, written with his daughter, Sylvia. And we'll talk about that as well as some of the other habits that can affect our sleep. We're talking about sleep. It does a family good. A book from Dr. Archibald Hart, former dean of the School of Psychology at Fuller Theological Seminary. And he has written a number of books and kind enough to join us today. Love to have you join the conversation as well. at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. We could come up with some books that would put you to sleep just by reading them. That's good. None of them are Arches, by the way, but we've got some others that we could send your way, and we'll have that opportunity to connect here on the other side of this break. Stay tuned. You're listening to Connecting Faith. The line going that to him, oh, what peace we often forfeit, so we don't take things to God in prayer. We'll talk about some ways that we can improve our sleep. Maybe prayer should be on the top of the list. But let's talk about some reasons why we don't sleep well. We're talking about sleep. It does a family good. That's the title of a book from Arch Hart. Dr. Archibald Hart is former dean of the School of Psychology at Fuller Theological Seminary. He teaches a couple of courses there still in psychopharmacology. He's written a number of books, several with his daughters, which would be a wonderful experience, I'm sure. Stressed or Depressed, Safe Haven Marriage, Unveiling Depression in Women, Unmasking Male Depression, The Anxiety Cure, A Thrill to Death, How the Endless Pursuit of Pleasure is Leaving Us Numb, and his latest, Digital Invasion, How Technology is Shaping You and Your Relationships. Wrote that with his daughter, Sylvia, as well. And Arch, let's talk a little bit about some of the reasons that we don't sleep well, and I assume that you mentioned about the TV in the bedroom. That's probably one of them, but I'm sure technology in general is playing a big part of that.
Absolutely, yes. The digital technology is a major, major destroyer of sleep. Me and my own family has gone through some struggles here. I have a grandson who, in Virginia, who would text his grandmother, my wife, back here. And the text messages, he loved to do that in the evening, but his text messages were coming in about 11 o'clock here when we were fast asleep, which means that it's 2 o'clock in the morning where he's sending text messages. And it's very common for young people today. They do not go to sleep. They go back to their smartphones and their digital gadgets, and it is now considered to be the most damaging sleep destroyer that we have got. That followed by caffeine.
We've become sort of addicted to them, haven't we? I mean, we wake up in the middle of the night and check our phones, or I guess maybe that's the other issue.
Yes, it is now an addiction. Brain scans show that that people who are addicted to digital involvement, their internet and their smartphones and their gaming and their pornography and everything else that goes with it, that there's very clearly an addictive process. The brain scans show that it is almost identical to taking one of the major drugs, that it has the same effect on a part of the brain called the locus accumbens or the pleasure center as cocaine or any of these powerful drugs. It's not the technology that's the problem there. It's not the technology. It's our misuse of it. We don't know when to stop. We don't know when to put it down. And if you have a sleep problem, one of the first things I would tell you to do is be disciplined enough to turn off your Wi-Fi, turn off your smartphones, turn off your computer at a reasonable time every evening so that you do not get drugged into the stimulation that comes with late night involvement.
So even sort of watching late night news on TV, not a good idea for sleep, probably.
Well, that is not as addicting as the other stuff is. We have to differentiate between the many apps that are available are designed by experts who know how to get you hooked on it. My one son-in-law, Virginia, is a patent examiner in this digital world, and I'm shocked at the things that people are coming up with. You know, it's all about getting new hooks. It's all about parents are not paying attention to their children's addictions. DSM-5, the diagnostic manual, almost included the addiction category, digital addiction, as an illness. It didn't make it finally because the technology experts were protesting that. But the next time around, it will be definitely listed as a significant addiction disorder.
Well, so Arch, if we're waking up in the middle of the night, or at some time we can't sleep, or maybe we can't fall asleep, so we just sort of lay in bed for an hour. What do you recommend? I mean, not turning on the technology, obviously, but what do we do if we get up, or should we just lay in bed and wait for sleep to come?
Well, there are some things you can do even ahead of that. One of the reasons why people don't sleep well is that they don't realize that the brain is an addict to regularity. In other words, you have to go to bed every night at the same time because your brain has a clock that is reset with the onset of darkness and the onset of light. So it is absolutely essential that you go to bed the same time every night. Now, if you work late into the night and you don't get home until 11 or so, then that's when you have to go to bed. But regularity is critical because the brain's clock is crucial. Go to bed at the same time every night. Get up every morning at the same time and immediately get into light. And the reason for that is that melatonin is what darkness starts the sleep process. But you've got to turn off your melatonin when you get up and get out into the light. Now, you guys back there in the east, I pity you in the wintertime. And that's why we have a high incidence of depression in these called SAD, because they're not getting enough light. But wherever possible, turn the light on. If you wake up during the night, then what develop a habit of prayer. In the old days, I'm talking about 150, 200 years ago, we slept in two parts. You slept twice in the night. You went to bed straight after the dark because you're tired and exhausted from your hard work all day. You wake up 2 o'clock in the morning, and that's when you would do your prayer time. That's when the lover, husband and wife would do their lovemaking. It's critical that if you wake up during the night, that you have in place a good habit of prayer time, a good habit of just spending time with God. Be still and know that I'm God. And I'm a strong advocate of relaxation. I have a CD on relaxation and Christian meditation. As believers, we have God to spend time with and to communicate with. And if I wake up in the early hours of the morning, I'm happy that I've done that because this is now gives me a little time to be alone with God. And usually I fall asleep very quickly. But those are some of the habits that you should develop to see you through those times of the night when, for a number of reasons, you can't sleep.
We'll get to a couple of calls or questions first. But I'm wondering, Arsh, maybe just before we get too far, are there some other sort of steps or kind of critical steps we can take to see our sleep improve? I mean, if there were a handful of things, you say here are the sure. the most important three or five, whatever they are.
Yes, yes. Another very important thing is to take control of your mental activity. If we go to bed and you're now rehearsing all the problems of the day or trying to remember things tomorrow, keep a little notebook next to you in the bed. And as you are relaxing, sitting back and preparing to go to bed, write down, we call it externalizing, write down any issues that are bothering you or the stuff that's got to be done. This is a way of telling the brain, I've got a note, I've made a note of it, now you can let go. Otherwise, your brain works to remind you again and again and again of this thing you haven't done, you've got to do on tomorrow. So the habit of sort of and people who get into the habit of writing diary and stuff like that really have an excellent resource that they can use.
Good words today.
A couple of other things.
Okay.
Avoid all caffeine after 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay.
Caffeine is a sleep destroyer. Make sure that you get enough physical exercise. The non-dream sleep is for rejuvenating the physical body. And if you don't get enough physical exercise, your brain doesn't need enough of the non-dream sleep to put you to sleep. So you can get that critical dream sleep that is essential.
But probably exercising right before bed, not a good idea, though, right?
Not right before bed, no. An hour or so before is okay. And I'm not talking about heavy-duty, adrenaline-stimulating exercising. That you've got to be careful that you keep your adrenaline down low. Okay. This is why learning a few relaxation exercises can be very, very helpful. I have a relaxation CD that I've had available for 20 years now, and it still go every day. I have people ordering it. There are a number of very good relaxation exercises you can master, and that helps to drop your adrenaline. That facilitates better sleep.
Okay. Good word. Talking to Dr. Archibald Hart today. That brings up, I guess, a question. We're talking about fitness. One of our callers wanted to know types of food and what should we avoid at bedtime. You mentioned no caffeine after 3, but are there some foods that maybe don't help us at night?
There are some foods, very spicy foods, any food that's likely to be upsetting to your digestive system. Those should be eaten at lunchtime or earlier. But it's also, I advocate that one's evening meal needs to be earlier. I often go back 200 years and ask myself, how did people function in those days? Because that's probably a little nearer to what God planned for our lives. And most people used to eat their main meal the midday, not in the evening. Or if you eat your main meal in the evening, which is common for most of us because we have to work, to do it as early as possible so that the digestive process has advanced quite a way before you go to sleep. But there are some foods that are highest. I'm a great lover of curries. I cook the best curry in all the world, quite frankly, and I love my curries. But I've got to be careful that I don't eat it too late in the evening.
Yeah, so I don't think if I invite you over for supper, you're not really going to be too impressed with my Norwegian white sauce, approach, Arch. I think you may have to smuggle some curry in. Probably, I'm thinking.
I probably would have to do that.
We're going to talk more with Dr. Archibald Hart in just a moment as we talk sleep. It does a family good. Just getting some good practical insights on how busy families can overcome sleep deprivation. How we can make sure that we're heading into this new year in the best possible mental perspective so that we can accomplish the task that God has set before us to do. And getting some great advice from Dr. Archibald Hart, who's former dean of the School of Psychology at Fuller Theological Seminary, and he's a clinical psychologist trained in his native South Africa. He's retired, but teaches a couple of courses in the psychopharmacology. And we're happy to have him on, as he's written a number of books, the latest being Digital Invasion, How Technology is Shaping You and Your Relationships. And we're going to talk more about sleep coming up in just a moment. I have a question about waking up too early. And what do we do with that? And hitting that snooze button. We'll get some insights from Dr. Hart. Stand by.
Hi, this is Dick Whitworth, General Manager of Faith Radio. It's the start of a new year, and I hope one of the New Year's resolutions that you've made this year is to support Faith Radio. Your prayerful, generous support is changing lives across the Upper Midwest. You can give simply and safely online at myfaithradio.com or call 877-933-2484 to make your gift today. I like you.
No, I like you.
No, I really like you.
I liked you first.
As you can see, at Faith Radio, we really like our friends on Facebook.
And we hope to connect with you there soon.
Find us when you search My Faith Radio on Facebook.
Or just browse to Facebook.com/My Faith Radio.
It's connecting faith to your everyday life
right in your Facebook newsfeed.
We look forward to your like.
My Faith Radio on Facebook.
Oh, 47 past the hour. Talking today with Dr. Archibald Hart. He's written a number of books, Stressed or Depressed, Safe Haven Marriage, The Anxiety Cure, Thrilled to Death, How the Endless Pursuit of Pleasure is Leaving Us Numb. His latest is Digital Invasion, How Technology is Shaping You and Your Relationships. He's written many of those with his daughters, who are three of them, and grandchildren, four grandsons, three granddaughters. The book we're referencing is called Sleep, It Does a Family Good. And Arch is a former dean of the School of Psychology at Fuller Theological Seminary. Arch, you did have a question. A listener, Travis, who sent it in online at myfaithradio.com, says, do you have any tips for helping me wake early and consistently? It seems that I'm in a deep sleep when my alarm sounds and I hit the snooze button several times before I can wake up. Let's talk about the snooze button.
Well, I can understand that, but the problem might be that you're going to bed too late. It just sounds to me that A, your brain needs more sleep than you're giving it, B, that you're not going to bed early enough for it to get enough sleep. Yeah, there are some people who need as much as 12 hours sleep a night. And about 5% of the population need as much sleep as that, and if they don't sort of admit to that or own up to it or allow themselves to get that sleep, they will be sleep deprived. It's just a fact that there are some people who need more sleep. So I think you've got to go to bed earlier. It's as simple as that.
Well, in fact, that's probably, sleeping in is one thing, but going to bed earlier is probably more beneficial, isn't it, that we get our sleep? I think my mother always used to talk about, the sleep before midnight was more valuable. Is that right? Or?
Well, it's not midnight itself because, other parts of the world, it's not midnight,
sure.
But it's midnight for you.
Well, mom always, principle. Of course, mom always wanted us to be home and in bed, too, of course. So there's,
exactly.
Yes.
So before midnight, it gives you that extra sleep. You have to pay attention to your sleeping habits and try to determine what is the optimum amount of sleep. In my book, I talk about how you should add just 15 minutes to your sleep for a week. Then add another 15 minutes to your sleep and do that until when you wake up naturally without an alarm clock, feeling rested and energized. You need to go through an exercise like that to find out how much sleep you really do need. It differs between people. I talk about a total of 9 hours as a general rule, but I can assure you that there are some people who need another 1.5 hours, 10.5, or even 12 hours a night in order to get enough sleep.
The title of your book or reference is called Sleep, It Does a Family Good, How Busy Families Can Overcome Sleep Deprivation. I'm assuming that there is a ripple effect. If one person isn't sleeping well, that it does have a ripple effect on the entire family.
Yes, it does. The couple, especially you will affect each other's sleep. But here again, I think a wise family will try to determine for each member of the family what is the optimum amount of sleep, the amount of sleep that helps you function the best. Sometimes it depends on the stage of life that you are in. A new mother with a little baby, the sleep patterns are going to be totally, totally different. Starting school or going from high school to college or something. There are many, many stages of life where you may need to adjust the amount of sleep that you are giving yourself. And there's a way you can do that, but simply by adding 15-minute increments, stick with it for a week at a time, and out of that determine what is the most effective amount of sleep. But because you see, Neil, it is a fact. I've proven this over and over again. I can turn out more work. I can write more if I for the right amount.
It's always the right thing you talk about. This has to do with our immune system and our memory, and our body needs it. I'm interested, Archer, before our time gets away from us, to talk a little bit about sleep aids. There's medications. There's natural supplements. We talk about melatonin. You can get, of course, melatonin pills. Are there some good things? Some things to watch out for in these areas?
That is very crucial. Melatonin is really a godsend. I think it's been approved by the FDA for mainly for sleep deprivation when you put travel, time changes and things like that. When the time comes in the year that you have to switch clocks backwards or forwards, melatonin can help you sleep because melatonin is the hormone of that darkness. And so if you're changing time, it can trigger it off. However, I recommend that you don't take it for more than five nights in a row, because if you're not careful, your brain will become dependent on it. You understand, Neil? The brain will become dependent if you keep feeding it. So you've got to force the brain to go back to produce its own melatonin, and you do that by darkening the environment, going to bed early enough, and so on. Some sedatives are very helpful. You can get some over-the-counter sedatives. And there are some medications. For example, there's a medication called Elavil that's antidepressant, but at a low dose is quite sedating, and that can be helpful under certain conditions. Sleeping pills themselves, unless you're absolutely essential, you should try to avoid them because they are addicting. You get dependent on them, and we have a real serious problem with a lot of people who have to have these sleeping pills, otherwise they can't go to sleep.
Which probably brings up, I think as you sort of talked about, there may be other issues there as well, where maybe there's some emotional tension or something that's masking those areas.
That's correct. We all have our problems every day, and you should develop some strategies for dealing with them. And the one I mentioned earlier is that keep a record. Clean up all your thoughts by writing them down. It's amazing how the brain, if you put it down on paper, we call it externalizing it, lets it go. Otherwise, it's going to, if you say, I must remember to do that tomorrow morning, you don't write it down, that your brain is going to wake you up every 10 minutes to tell you to do that in the next morning. So those are ways in which you can do it. But in terms of the natural there are some over-the-counter medications that are sedating that can help you. They're not sleeping pills. And a full-blown sleeping pill is not really a sleeping aid. It just knocks you out so that you don't worry about not sleeping. It's like an anesthetic, I had last week, I had a little bit of surgery, and so they knocked me out with an anesthetic. I didn't wake up after that saying, wow, that was a nice sleep. In fact, quite the reverse. So they are natural, some teas, some decaffeinated teas and other sedatives like that, that one can use to kick the sleep process.
And as we've sort of touched on, that routine is so valuable, and I think particularly for young children especially, right, to get them into that habit that's going to pay dividends all through the life.
If you go to bed the same night time every night, your brain develops a clock. It's got it. In fact, there are three clocks in the brain, and the 1 o'clock gets that sleep onset. And every night that time, if you do it regularly, always go to bed at the same time, you will be amazed at how your brain puts you to sleep at that time, if you allow it.
And talking about is that this really is vital for brain health, for our immune system. I mean, for overall health, this is God's design.
It's God's design. You know, the idea that you don't need to sleep as much as that is real nonsense. We know, for example, you know, rats have a lifespan of 2 or 3 years, but if you deprive a rat of sleep, it dies at 4 to 5 days. Which is the same period of time it'll die if it starves. I mean, that's how critical sleep is to much of nature. If we don't get enough sleep, we develop what are called micro sleeps. Australia is very, very strong on this point because of their long distances of travel. The people fall asleep just for a second or two, and that's when you can have a terrible accident. And then lastly, let me say that if you don't get enough dream sleep, you begin to develop rather bizarre behaviors. So sleep is God's great gift to us, and from a Christian believer's point of view, I serve God best when I'm doing what He has designed me to do.
Indeed. Arch, if people wanted to find out a little bit more about your writings, is there a website or place they could go to kind of just keep up?
Yes, there is a website, and the latest one is probably the best one to go to, and it is the digitalinvasion.com.
Okay, digital.
Digitalinvasion.com. And my books are all available at bookstores and Amazon.com. I have all my books that you can access.
We'd love to do that. Thanks so much to Dr. Archibald Hart joining us today. We're talking about sleep. Check it out at digitalinvasion.com.